Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Hope everyone had an amazing week. Let's get the show started by talking about what I just can't let go of this week. And this one is fresh in my mind. It's the State of the Union Address. I am such a dork when it comes to stuff like this. I look forward to these events so much. First of all, love a television event. Love when everyone is sitting on their couch watching the same thing. It makes me feel warm and happy inside. But then also, when you have the buildup to an event like this with President Biden and everyone is kind of, you know, wondering about his health and how he's going to do and how with it he's going to seem when he gives a speech like this, it makes for a pretty interesting experience. So I started my watching experience by being disappointed that I no longer have C-SPAN. I have YouTube TV now, and I guess they just don't have C-SPAN, or I'd have to pay extra for it or something. But I love C-SPAN because you just get a closer look at what's going on in those chambers. And gosh, I remember when Kevin McCarthy was becoming speaker and they were letting those C-SPAN cameras run wild. It was so fun. But yeah, I was disappointed they didn't have C-SPAN. I had to watch it on like CNN and Fox and stuff. I was kind of flipping back and forth. I like to check out and see what everybody is saying. Biden was a little late to the State of the Union. He took his time leaving the White House. I think that had to do with the protesters blocking the streets and stuff. And maybe that's why he got a little bit of a late start. But he got there. He looked good. But to be fair, I do think the bar was kind of on the floor. Everyone talking about this and anticipating this was basically saying if he can just show up and form a coherent sentence, people are going to take that as a victory. And the way I look at it is we have double standards for everyone out there. Everyone's different and everyone has a different standard for things. But I definitely think that since Biden is, I mean, he is an older gentleman. And yes, sometimes you see him and he seems real old. He was not wearing his age the way he does sometimes last night or during the State of the Union. And he did a pretty good job. But, you know, like I said, double standards out there. If he comes across as youthful at all, that's a victory. You look at Donald Trump. Trump is kind of like a mean person. So if he says anything gracious, it's like, oh, my gosh, look how nice he's being. So there's different standards for different people. It reminds me of the first time I noticed that. I was in kindergarten and there were these boys in my class that were always acting up, tale as old as time. And we used to get these wooden beads. If you were being like really good, it was a prize. You got these wooden beads and if you collected a certain number, you got to like pick a toy out of the toy chest. Pretty good deal, right? Well, one time the teacher came in the room and these little boys that were always acting up were simply just sitting there with their hands folded at their desk, which is what we're all supposed to be doing. And she just couldn't believe that they were being good and gave them a ton of wooden beads. And I'm sitting there going, hey, where's my beads? I'm sitting here with my hands folded all the time. But that's just the way life works. So yeah, different standards for Biden. He gets high scores just because he made it work during the State of the Union. You know, he didn't have like a Mitch McConnell moment where he just completely spaced out and didn't know what to say or couldn't speak. So good for him that he was able to nail that. I kept seeing pundits saying that this is a overtly political State of the Union, much more political than the State of the Union typically gets. Now, I don't know about that. I tend to see them all as political, but it did feel like a campaign speech. Biden brought up Trump, I thought, way too many times. He kept saying, my predecessor. All right, we'll talk about what you're going to do, though. I mean, at a certain point, you've made the point you want to make about Trump. Now let's talk about the future. Speaking of Trump, he was live truthing the event. Now, I do not have Truth Social, and I don't want to sign up for it, mostly because I just don't want another social media platform and I don't want to be on Truth. But I was kind of trying to keep up with some of the things he was saying. And he just seemed to be just straight out live tweeting it or live truthing it, I should say, like a not like a journalist would, but just like any normie would. And he was saying kind of snarky things. At one point, he was putting Snapchat filters on the president, so he looked all crazy. I thought that was pretty funny. Let's see here. Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House. I guess I can't hold him to too high of a standard after Pelosi ripped up the State of the Union address a few years back. But I did think he had a pretty sour look on his face and he kept shaking his head. And I wished he wouldn't do that. I felt like that was a little petty. But like I said, how can you even get mad at him after Pelosi did that in the past? He was just distracting. The hecklers, Biden did okay with the hecklers. He did a pretty good job. He did better than I would do. I think that would probably stop me in my tracks for sure. And then the final thing I wanted to bring up here, people getting selfies with the president. This was happening as he was walking into the chamber. And I thought, that is so inconsiderate to, he's already late and now you're stopping him and taking a photo with him before he gets onto the podium. Like, everyone in the country is watching this right now. Can you get your photo later? But it's just so interesting to see these lawmakers get out their phones and some of them struggling to take a good selfie. I don't know. It's just kind of funny and just kind of a sign of the times that we live in. So did you watch the State of the Union address? Maybe by the time you're hearing this, maybe you're podcasting or something. It's a little bit of old news. But if you'd like to share your thoughts, you can always talk to me on Twitter at RachelZSTL. I would love to hear from you. All right. So coming up on the show, I'm going to talk to Chris Saraceno from Bartolino's, and Chris is at the Docket and Chris's Pancake House. Chris is a great guy. I've been friends with him for a couple of years now, ever since we moved into this building to work at Odyssey. Chris's at the Docket is a great place to go for breakfast or lunch if you're in downtown St. Louis. They're kind of in the center of everything. They're kind of a hub for the movers and shakers of St. Louis because they've got the courts right there. They've got City Hall. There's a lot going on downtown, obviously, and they are in the center of it. And I just talked to Chris about what it's like running a restaurant in downtown St. Louis. He's really involved in his community, so he has some great insights, and he just has some great insights on the service industry in general. I'm also going to talk to Kimberly Zirkel. She wrote a cookbook called French Bakery Cookbook. And Tara Galena, she's with Take Root Hospitality. They have an event coming up next Saturday, March 16th at Winslow's Table that they would like to tell you about. It's a book signing, so we'll hear from them in the final segment of the Rachel Zimmerman Show. Thank you guys so much for listening. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'll talk to Chris Saraceno. You're listening to the Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. All right, Chris Saraceno is in studio with me on the Rachel Zimmerman Show. You know him from Chris's at the Docket, Chris's Pancake House. Chris, thank you so much for walking across the street because you're really close and taking the time to come talk to me today.
Yeah, easy commute. Thank you for having me. It's just an honor to be on your show.
It's an honor for me to have you here. Ever since we moved to this building, which was, gosh, I want to say 2018, Chris's at the Docket has just been like the staple for the Dave Glover Show. For sure, we go over there for lunch all the time, and you guys do such amazing service, amazing food, and you're in the center of everything. So it's just great to have you here. Let's start by talking about your family legacy running restaurants here in St. Louis. Tell me about that.
Thank you, Rachel. Now, my mother and father started in the restaurant business in 61. We've had a nice long run in the restaurant business. My brothers and I, my brother John, Bart, Michael, and myself, learned the business through our family. And through the years, Bart and has kind of managed and ran the Bartolino's location on the Hill. My brother Mike and John were taking care of the Bartolino's South location out in South Lindbergh. And Chris's Pancake came along in 1987, and then the Docket came along in 2016, excuse me. And, it's a it's truly a family business. All of our family is involved. You cannot run the business, a restaurant business, without having the support of your family, your wife, your children, even just the understanding of being able to have such long hours and try to keep a family life going as well as a business life going and keeping it all kind of running on track at the same time. It's truly a family commitment, and we are really lucky to have such great support. And also, our family would not be where we are without the great longevity and loyalty of our loyal employees that are just like family.
Mm-hmm. So what was your childhood like? Were you just always in a kitchen or out in a dining room?
Well, I was the youngest of four, so and there was a little bit of a gap between me and my three brothers. So I had a kind of a normal childhood. My brothers kind of were thrown into the business, and not in a bad way, but just as a family business when everybody is all hands on deck, and they got involved, and it was just kind of just the way of life. It was not really even – you didn't know any different, right? So mm-hmm. It was all the way of life. I was able to go through, have a normal grade school, high school. I was able to play sports. I was involved in a lot of sports activities and was able to follow my soccer up until the point where it wasn't going anywhere. So I was able to get into the business then. I did always help, but not as committed as my brothers were. So now I think my two older brothers, they've carried me for a while. So I'm trying to let them kind of take a little rest and help with their ability to enjoy their life. And now it's kind of my turn to keep things running.
You said it's a way of life. Did you ever do anything else job wise, or has it always been this? Or was your heart ever
in the restaurant business? I've always been in the restaurant business. I've been asked a million times what would be my ideal job. I'd love to be a professional broadcaster in sports, but that didn't work out. But this has always been a way of life. It's our family's way of life. It's it's been such a wonderful career for our family. It's our life.
Yeah. So Chris said the docket is at the center of so much downtown. You've got the law school, you've got the court, city hall, you've got KMOX across the street. You must see everyone walk through those doors.
Yes. The voice of St. Louis. I mean, how lucky are we to be right across the street of it? And I grew up on KMOX and I listened to it nonstop on my radio in my car. But yeah, we are. The law school, moving down here made so much sense for the law school. And I'll tell you how we got involved there. My son was going to law school at SLU, mentioned that there was going to be, maybe they were putting an RFP out to get a restaurant in that location. And he suggested to put Chris's type concept that he thought it would work well. And so we did. I joined partnership with Tim Jansen, who was working at the Marriott as the executive chef, who was dating Audrey, who's the manager at the Docket as well.
Oh, wow.
And so kind of reached out to him to see if he had an interest to come in and partnering over there, because we needed somebody with his experience to be able to open a place down here. And so, as you say, the rest is history. And we've found our niche. We're open 7 to 2. There's a lot of action. We do a lot of work with the law school as far as their catering and things that go on within the building and with SLU. And that's been a great partnership. So we've been very, very glad to be right here in downtown St. Louis. I personally have always wanted to have a restaurant downtown St. Louis. We actually looked probably 5 years prior to 2016, where the parking garage is down at Clark and Tucker, where Maurizio Pizza went in. But we were looking at opening, and Chris's there. Larry Williams was a treasurer there at the time, and he's a good customer of ours, and he was interested in trying to get that concept there. It just didn't work out, just the size of the restaurant, just for just different reasons. But things do sometimes fall into place, and this is one of those opportunities that came to us and able to make it work.
I'm sure being downtown has its challenges too. What kind of stuff do you deal with on a day-to-day basis that maybe you wouldn't have to deal with if you were somewhere else?
You know, it's a very, I mean, downtown, when things are going on, like when in the summertime and when the Cardinals are in town and having visitors from across all over that are coming in to watch the Cardinals or watch their team, whoever they would be playing, the Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, Chicago. It's a great, lively town. This downtown has so much to offer. I mean, we have a great city. We do. I'm born and raised in the city. I'm a big advocate for St. Louis City. I believe in the city. And I think we have so much to offer and so much great things going on, and it is good, and it is challenging at times too. There was a lot of challenges with regards to a lot of people hanging out in the parks across the street, right outside your window here. That delivered a lot of challenges for us because of their unfortunate situation of being homeless or falling on tough times. And, you know, they're just trying to survive too. And, mm-hmm. and so you're trying to balance that. You have to have compassion and towards the issues, but we also have the business to run, and it's, those are challenges that we kind of have to figure out.
I'm so glad you're on the show, Chris, because the goal of my show when we talk about St. Louis is, yeah, we can acknowledge the problems and acknowledge the challenges, but ultimately we have so much going for us in this city. Mm-hmm. And I know that your establishment downtown is such a, I mean, it's just great to have somewhere to go to have lunch or to have breakfast, and you can get the whole menu all day. It's just really nice, and it's a great gathering place. And there have been times where I'm in there, I'm like, oh, I think that's the mayor. I think that's this older person. I mean, it's just really cool to have that kind of gathering point downtown.
Yeah, you know, our family business was, and it was built on that, was as a gathering place, a place where people, all people, feel comfortable to come, to be serviced, to have a chance to, you know, a break, whether it's just they need a quick meal or whether they just want to hang out with the group, whatever the occasion is, like, that's what our family was. That was really the biggest thing our parents taught us was with regards to service and really creating relationships and building relationships. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, we've had the great honor to serve mayors and senators and judges and but also just the be able to also take care of just an everyday person who's going through their busy life and stopping in and having a good comforting place to eat, to enjoy some peace and quiet or time just for themselves or with another guest with them. I think that's the greatest part about the hospitality business and the greatest part about being down here is to have that. It's really a melting pot for all.
So you mentioned earlier how your staff is like family. That is really apparent when you go into your restaurant. Audrey in particular always usually takes care of me whenever I go in. This is sounding like a commercial for Chris's at the Docket, but I really go like once a week. It's an amazing place. Tell me about building those relationships with your staff and how longstanding they are.
You know, again, something we learned from our parents. I mean, it is vitally important. Our number one value is the people that who come to work with us. You know, you come to work for us, but you really come to work with us. I mean, that's how we've always learned from our parents and learned that. And we try every day to really foster those relationships with our team. And to build that and you know, and I think that transcends to the guest, right? Like to make them feel that they're part of our family as mm-hmm. well. I mean, that's just truly, you know, our mission. Those are what we really identify as our goal is when people come in that come to work with us, that we, treat them like family, treat them well. And you know, create a good long lasting relationship and a good place for them to work and earn a living. I mean, it's really that's what we work to do.
So I'm fascinated by like your day to day operations. What's a typical day like for you?
That's good. I am, the other part about this is that I think we, you know, there's no job that I wouldn't do or haven't done or couldn't do. So like when we, you know, and everything is always, I always say this with regards to the staff, like this is always about the guest. Like that's why I'm kind of a crazy man about making sure the floor is clean or making sure that there's not fingerprints in the door or just the little things that I see that I think is very, very important that makes just a better experience for the guest. So really every day I kind of start my day with some exercise and then I make my rounds. I exercise downtown, so I stop by the Docket, make sure everything's there. Hey, everybody here today? Everything's going good. Yeah, things are on track. I head up to the Watson location, and I'm up there through till about lunchtime. Head back to the Docket, and then just depends on what's going on the rest of the day through whether I'm doing some other stuff with our Bartolino's locations, kind of keeping things going. We have a new location on the horizon out in 141 and Big Bend. That's so a lot of planning has been going on with that. Just, you know, there's no, your job's kind of never done because it's always something you're planning for the next day. If there's events down at the docket or at the upstairs in law school, I'm always there to be with the team to support them in whatever way we can. I just like to be part of what's going on. I feel like it's important to our team, and I feel like it's important to the people we're serving.
What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned in all your years running restaurants?
Well, I think you have to be service is number one, and building relationships. I think at times, may fall a little short with regards to if something wasn't prepared, just what the guests liked or wanted. You know, I think if you have a good relationship and you're communicating and you're, involved in the day-to-day activity, I think you have a lot of respect that way. And I think, the biggest thing is giving your respect and commitment to your team and to your guest. And I think you have to have a lot of, there's a lot of humility to that. And, it's a service business. Mm-hmm. So I feel like service is the top priority.
How did you guys survive COVID? I know it was so tough for everybody, but you guys just seemed to, you were the first place I went to whenever it was like time to start going back to restaurants. But how did you guys do that?
A lot of prayers, but
yeah.
No, but so I think really truthfully, you had to manage, you had to manage through a lot, like what was going on, what's coming down the pipe. And a lot of it was new, it was uncharted territories, right? It was just very new. And so hear what's going on, try to do, I know it sounds really, but try to do the right things. Try to really practice all the hygienes, practice all the safe practices that were being given instructions wise through the health departments, through the medical fields. And I feel like, we are such a community of people getting out. People really do enjoy getting out. People do enjoy coming back, in the gatherings and having to be able to have lunch together, breakfast together, meals together. I think the public was looking for it, and I think they were going to the places that felt they were handling it the way that it would be, it should be handled, practicing all the good hygienes and your staff kind of following the guidelines that were given. And just that's kind of how we made it through.
Mm-hmm. Anything change permanently, or do you guys feel like you snapped back?
I mean, there's a lot changed, and the restaurant business, is changing minute by minute. I maybe not that much, but day by day, it's not as predictable as it was. There's a lot of different challenges with regards to supply issues. There's a lot of, obviously, the big thing is the labor issue. Mm-hmm. Those things are challenges, but I'm not a fan of being a victim of circumstances. I'd rather let's fight it. Let's fight through this. What do we need to do? What's going on? How do we, how do we attract the best labor market? How do we fight the challenges of chain, food chain supply issues or whatever they may be? And it, and there are a lot. They come at you every day, and you just have to be willing to try to work through them, and they're not going to go away. Mm-hmm. You got to face them and work out and try to figure out what's the best options and make a decision and move.
You talk about not wanting to have that victim mindset. Is that something you learned from your family too?
Well, the one thing, my dad was an immigrant, came here in 1954, had $7 in his pocket.
Wow.
He had his two cousins and his aunt that he came to stay and live with and start a new life for himself. My dad never knew the word no. If you told him he couldn't do something, he was like, that was, and so if that's anything, his perseverance, persistence, and, just always willing to be better and get better was what, And my mom was a big, huge part of that too. she was the rock. And she unfortunately passed in at 60 years old. She was pretty young when she passed, but she taught us like hard, like the values of hard work. And I think, I mean, I know that sounds really cliche-ish, and I know, but really, if you work hard, you stay committed to what you're doing, I do believe things will work out. And I was blessed. I mean, we were blessed to have two great parents. My dad always said, you know, you were born with a silver spoon in my mouth and your mouth. And I said, no, I was born with two silver spoons in my mouth. I was lucky. So I think that's just an absolute huge lesson that, hey, just work hard. You know, jokingly now, I not jokingly, but my kids who do, you know, I have four kids, and they played sports and our school or whatever. But I always had a saying to them, whatever they did, whenever they went to the challenging thing, I always said, work hard, move your feet, and have fun. Mm. And I think if you kind of say those three, you know, three basic principles, and, you know, you work hard, you keep your feet moving, you keep moving, and have fun doing it, I think you can come out of most anything.
I love that. I'm going to write that down.
It's just kind of been always something that I've always said to them. And that's what I learned from my parents and my brothers and their families. And I mean, I being the youngest of four, I've had the great opportunity to learn a lot from all three of them. Mm-hmm. And, just being the youngest, you're able to kind of, I'm kind of an observer, mm-hmm. and I watch and learn from them, and they've been great role models, and I wouldn't be sitting here if I didn't have them as well.
Chris, this is my final question for you. What's your favorite part of restaurant life? What keeps you going in every day?
The favorite part about restaurant life is our guest, and they keep us going, and even the challengings. And even the ones who just like watching somebody in your restaurant, it's such a humbling, it's so humbling to have somebody walk through your doors. It really is one of the most humbling things that you can experience as a restaurant owner. Somebody has chosen your establishment to spend their hard-earned money to enjoy a meal in your establishment. It's humbling. I never take it for granted, nor do I ever. The one thing I always try to preach and pass along to our team is that we can never take it for granted. And you know, it should be, we take it very seriously. We are very, very grateful for those guests. And so it is. It's the most humbling thing to watch a guest enjoy their time. And when they leave and say, thank you, this was great. I mean, that's like, how good can, how much more can you want? Like, it's such a great experience and such a great humbling feeling for me.
Anything you want to plug or promote while you're on?
Like I said, we have a lot going on. I if I can plug anything, if I can say anything, I really want to thank the commitment of my family. I want to thank the commitment of our team. Across all of our restaurants, we cannot do the things we do without their commitment. And I thank them for their hard work every day. And I thank them for their commitment to our guest. And I thank you for having me here, because it's such an honor to be on the show and just to be a part of this. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Rachel Zimmerman Show on KMOX. Now for my next segment, I have Kimberly Zirkle and Tara Galina. Kimberly is the author of the French Bakery Cookbook, and Tara is with Take Root Hospitality. They have an event coming up next weekend, Saturday, March 16th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Winslow's Table in U City. They have a book signing going on. So let's start with you, Kimberly. First of all, tell us about yourself. From what I understand, this is by no means your first book that you've written.
Yeah, so this is my fifth cookbook to either completely author or collaborate with for the publisher Cider Mill Press, and they're an imprint of HarperCollins. My background is, I am from Missouri, born and raised in Joplin, Missouri, so a few hours away from St. Louis. And after studying French in college, I moved to France and I lived in Paris for 10 years. When I decided to move back to the United States, I moved to San Francisco, where I was the assistant and communications manager for a French chef there. And that's where I made a lot of contacts in the food and wine world. And so then when I decided to pursue my passion of writing and really just make writing my main source of income, I was able to start working on these cookbooks. And the French bakery was really just like a dream come true, being able to incorporate my knowledge about French culture, French food, and then also reach out to some of my contacts in the food and wine industry. And so I visit St. Louis regularly. My brother lives there. He lives down the street from Winslow's Table. I go there every time I come into town to see him. And so it was just a no-brainer to reach out to Tara for recipes for this book. And she told me about Bistro La Floraison. I was wondering how to pronounce it, but told me about the French bistro as well, and said, can we contribute some recipes from them as well? And so that led us to collaborating, and that's why we're having this event together now.
Awesome. So, Tara, you are with Winslow's Table. You're one of the owners. And as Kimberly just said, two of these recipes are from Winslow Table's sister restaurant. Tell us a little bit about that and how you guys went about selecting these recipes for the book.
Yeah. So Tagart Hospitality, we've got four restaurant concepts here in St. Louis. Winslow's is definitely a bakery, but we have a little more French inflection at our Bistro La Floraison in Clayton. And there's two classic little appetizers that we have on the menu there that have been on since day one and will probably never leave. And so when Kimberly reached out, I thought these would be fantastic offerings for the book. One of them are our gougères, which are very classic, you know, kind of essentially think of a cream puff, but made with cheese. And we serve ours with this like decadent Gruyere mousse to dip it in, which is just like takes it to a whole new level. And people love it. And then the other ones, which we actually will be offering some samples of during the book signing, are our French onion financiers, which kind of encapsulate all those wonderful flavors of a French onion soup and into this little bite that adorably looks like a cupcake, but is definitely savory. So it was really fun to see these in print and, you know, to get a copy of the book and to see the beautiful, you know, kind of compilation of all of these wonderful pastries and what from across the country. I'm also a lover of all things French, so I'm equally excited to cook from the book as well.
Very cool. So Kimberly, you gave us a really great resume as far as, you know, all this stuff that you've done leading up to this cookbook. Why now? Why did you decide to write the French Bakery Cookbook now?
Number one, the easy answer is the publishing company that I work with was really interested in this topic and wanted to tap into something that was more my level of expertise since I lived in France. I also think right now is a great time to be talking about French cuisine because there's a little something coming up called the Olympics in Paris this summer. And so all eyes are going to be turned on France, onto French culture. And it's a really exciting time to, you know, maybe host a Olympics party at your home, a watching party, and make some financiers and gougères from Tara's restaurants or other recipes in the book.
Very nice. So the book signing is next Saturday, March 16th, from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Winslow's Table. It's right there in U City. From what I understand, you're going to have the book on sale for $27.99 for people to pick up. They can get you to sign the book and then stay for lunch. Tara, tell people what they can expect when they walk into Winslow's Table.
Yeah, if you've never been, I mean, it's a bustling kind of catch-all neighborhood spot in University City. So we serve breakfast, lunch, and dinner. We have our in-house bakery. We have retail offerings as well, a little retail shop kind of right when you walk in the door, which is where you'll find Kimberly's table set up. And it's really just a wonderful place to kind of, you know, either grab a coffee and a treat or stay for a full meal or kind of indulge in one of our lovely salads or, you know, have a cheeseburger. And we kind of do it all, but it's a wonderful neighborhood spot that is open all day.
Awesome. Well, Kimberly Zirkle is the author of the French Bakery Cookbook. Tara Galina is with Take Root Hospitality. They hope to see you at Winslow's Table on Saturday, March 16th. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me on The Rachel Zimmerman Show. I really appreciate it, and I hope the event goes well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.